Sure, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Bill. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
And I want to thank you for all coming out on this steamy, hot Saturday morning. And I really want to also thank everybody that was involved in putting this together. I know you did a lot of hard work, and it's certainly appreciated. The Razor's Edge Event Planning Committee really did a top job again. So with that being said, congratulations on your 2 years, and I really liked what you said about listening. And I have a sobriety date of October 4th of 99. I don't know if that makes much of a difference or not, but I still need to do what she was talking about and keep on listening. As far as my experience, strength, and hope, I grew up in Menominee Falls. I got three younger brothers and an older sister. And, you know, it was an average lifestyle, family, loving, caring parents. My dad was, and I don't do assessments, I leave that to the professionals, but alcoholic, but a quiet one. I never know chaos in the house. There's a few words from mom occasionally about his drinking. And I think I was around the age of 14. And I lost my grandfather almost directly due to alcoholism. And later found out that that's how I lost my other grandfather too. So, you know, if I was born alcoholic, maybe, possibly. But I tell you, my first experience with drugs and alcohol, maybe around 15 in high school, I was mostly smoking pot almost on a daily basis. With that being said, I qualify for NA, CA, AA, whatever addiction whatever was in front of me was my escape, my relief, my answer. And I believe I always, and even to this day, I remember some of those first moments and those first, if you will, highs. I think I always chase that. And never in my life will I ever be able to find that again. And I've really accepted that, because the insanity and the career and path of my addictions and my cocaine use and my alcohol abuse, I'm not going to go into all the chaos, but I'll jump up till I graduated from high school at the age of 18. Back then it was legal drinking age. I'm not too sure how I graduated, but I do have a legitimate diploma, because I was stoned and high and open campus in Menominee Falls. We went to the bars and tried to come back to school. That was probably part of the reason why a couple years later it was changed to 19. I'm sure me and a few thousand others. But, you know, where did I cross that line of being able to handle it, to a troubled person, to be diagnosed with alcoholism and other drug abuse? I was hired, thanks to my uncle, at Briggs & Stratton, second shift, and I immediately latched on to people like me that after work we drank, and by the grace of God and whatever, I didn't get caught for drinking and driving, and I'll use the word yet, because yet follows pretty much everything I did. I did have a drunken driving ticket in 1984, and that was after many times of being either told that we're following you home, call a friend, I'm taking you home, and as we all know, those days are way gone. And I got a close friend. She and I have been through a lot together. I try to support her almost to the point of enabling, but she just recently got a fifth OWI over the 4th of July, and she's sitting now. So, I mean, my greatest motivator really became pain and consequences, but I think I reached a couple different bottoms a couple different times. I was, and quite a few hundred were laid off from Briggs & Stratton if you had 5 years or less, and I had 2.5 years, and pretty much believed I had the world by the ass. And now that I had all this time and collecting top unemployment, where do you think my using went? It went sky high. And I definitely crossed that line and forced to eventually move back home under one condition, as Mom and Dad said, that I don't come home at 2 a.m. and disrupt and be drunk. And I couldn't follow those rules, so I believe my first treatment I was kind of forced into. Didn't really want to be there, didn't think I had a choice. That was back in the days of 30-day treatments. We all know that those are gone too. And I was just talking to John's wife about that. When, you know, I learned a lot through that. I did a fourth and fifth step for what it was worth. I think I remained dry for a matter of a couple months. And then I just went out there and continued to go out there believing, you know, where the first step talks about powerless and unmanageable. And I really had a hard time swallowing that. Whether I'm just stubborn or a combination of things, I kept saying, this thing isn't going to beat me. This pipe isn't going to beat me. But I stayed in restaurants. My career now is still in food service at a different level with restaurant work, pretty much nights, cocktail lounge, high stress, recipe for my drinking and others. And quite honestly, those around me, whether it was relationships or friends or family, if they didn't approve about the way I did things or the way I acted, then I just moved on. I found other people that used and abused like I did, although I didn't really recognize it. I thought that this was pretty much normal. I had some consequences, and I continued to try to live that way until probably maybe around the age of 24, 25, and I started getting in trouble, and I started going to jail. And then somebody was talking about, my friend that's retired now, remembers talking to me. He was a health and human services counselor, and he remembers talking to me in a jail, and I, you know, did the, if you will, the foxhole prayers that, you know, God, get me out of this jam. And to be honest with you, sometimes I didn't even know why I was there. And blackouts became regular. I was forced into an assessment where I tried to deny things. I tried to lie. I tried to think I was smarter then the professionals, and they've seen right through it. Once again, diagnosed with alcoholism. But back in 98, a few things happened. For one, because of my, I'll say, disease, I was forced, because I didn't know how to live any other way, I was forced to hit the streets. And then I realized I can't do this anymore. I need help. I need people. I need to get honest. So I tried once again to recover. I'm a good, bad example of half measures avail us nothing. I have a whole gang full of 90-day chips, and that's a result of not having sponsorship, not being willing, not really working anything. So it was a cycle, if you will, of moments of insanity, a couple clear moments, short-lived. I met some of you. My biggest problem, I think, was myself. I stopped realizing that the seed was planted, and I wanted what you guys had. I seen happiness, I seen smiles, I seen genuine work being done, and I knew I couldn't survive. I was on the streets. I was the mayor's worst enemy, as she told the chief of police to clean up the streets, and I was one of the dozen, if you will. Drinking back then was legal in the park systems from noon till 10 p.m. Our problem was Discount Liquor opened at 9, and then Frank Park's right there. So I had a whole gang of municipal tickets at $95.50 a piece, 14 of them to be exact. I met this gentleman in the park system. A little later found out he worked for Addictive Resources, and that was his job. It was called Street Outreach. His name is Bill Kenny. And he would sit with us and talk and not really push anything, but saying recovery is there, but if you want it, here's my card. If you don't want to live this way, call me. I then was so bad off. This was now the fall of 99, that I couldn't hold a job. I was drinking around the clock. Once again, still on the streets. If that alcohol would leave my system, I would chronically be ill and violently be ill. And every moment I got, and every person I could latch onto was affected. Every opportunity I could, I was still hitting that pipe. And that, as we know, what that does, it took me places and insanity and examples of powerless and unmanageable that are extreme. So now I was so sick that my drinking friends, a couple of them, went to another friend who was the mother of a person that died of this disease, a very, very close friend of mine. I was a pallbearer at his funeral. We were friends for 15 years, and he's younger than me, and they didn't write it down that way, but he died of alcoholism. He was drinking vodka around the clock, and his head aneurysm. So So they went to this mother and they said, "We're afraid Bill's dying like your son." And she called my mom. And my mother and her two sisters, my two aunts, those four, on the night of October 4th of 99, came out to where they pretty much knew we had little drinking parties at night. And I know now, of course, it was a spiritual experience. I'm a big believer in prayer now, because 2 days before that I was hitting my knees and doing the foxhole thing and saying, "If you're there, please help." And these four women came out that night and talked to me, and I went back to my acquaintances, friends at the time, and emptied my wallet and said, "I can't do this anymore," and went to the Lawrence Center. And that was the night of my last drink. On my third day in Lawrence Center, I started to see a little bit clearly. Department of Health and Human Services came out, and I thought they were going to point me in a direction of maybe a halfway house or an outpatient, and she told me, "Bill, we've been down this road before. We funded you. You know what to do. Go out and do it." And to be honest with you, for a little while I was crushed. I didn't, "You mean you're going to open these doors and that's it?" And she said, basically, yes. So with that being said, I frantically called. I started, I believe, with my parents. And then, like I said, I was talking about this guy that, this Bill guy that was in a park system, this counselor. Excuse me. And I pulled his card out of my wallet and I called him. And I called the Salvation Army and I called everybody I knew. And the Salvation Army Lodge, downtown Waukesha, said they were full. But I talked to the captain. Back in 97 and 98, I was an employee of the Salvation Army Adult Rehab Center. I was a kitchen supervisor there, and we talked a little bit, and he said, "I'm going to pull out a cot for you, Bill." And, you know, that was, at that time, the first day of the rest of my life. And I thank my higher power, who I call God now, that I just had a roof, a bite to eat, and I could go out there and I could separate myself from some of the people that weren't, I'll just use the word honest, and I knew I was dying, so I needed recovery, and I hit as many meetings, and I talked to this Bill guy as often as possible, and he became my sponsor. And we went out and we were doing the deal. And I don't know if I'm gonna say 90 and 90, but it was probably pretty close. I pounded the pavement for employment. Had some sort of a resume, a lot of holes in it. But a month after being in the Salvation Army Lodge, I landed a job at cafeterias at GE Healthcare. And little baby steps. And I was talking to a sponsee about this last week that's struggling. And it's, we all talk about 24 hours at a time, and, you know, the cocaine cravings were hitting me heavy and hard, and probably even harder than the alcohol at weird times. And you know, sometimes you talk about 24 hours a day, that I was having moments, you know, hours at a time, and praying. And finally that phone I could pick up, and I found you know, I found love in these people and you guys and in these programs, and you all gave me hope that you've been there, and suggestions. My sponsor never did anything but make suggestions. He didn't order me to do anything. I take that back. I had to do 2 meetings a week. But to be honest with you, that was about it that I can remember until my second year. My first 2 years, I was just coming and listening. And I would be at a meeting, and it would be a topic, it would be a step, it would be a tradition. And to be honest with you, that's how I lived the first 2 years. But I'm gonna say I was dry. From the outside, I was doing all the right things, but there wasn't real honest step work yet. My sponsor recognized this. I was also in a relationship that was going south. And he said, I don't care who you do your fifth step with, but let's set a 30-day deadline for a 4 step. Because I fear you're going to go back out. So with that being said, I put pen to paper. In that month, we formally worked steps 1, 2, and 3. And admitting I was an alcoholic and powerless and unmanageable, that was pretty obvious. But I didn't accept it. I didn't, not from here. Until I realized that the powerful, cunning, and baffling that it talks about, and realized now I'm going to surrender, and I'm going to admit defeat. And I came to believe. I know it says that power greater than myself, ourselves. And I like the part in the steps, especially early in my recovery, where it says, as we understood them, because I was lost. I was one lost person that was stripped of everything, and I needed all you and direction and sponsorship and readings from the big book. Like I said, I'd already been around for a couple of years. It was early in my second year. I shared my fourth with them. In other words, I did a fifth. Did I see a burning bush or anything? No. But I did have relief, and I felt I could now move on, if you will. The gifts started coming. I was promoted. I did this, that, and other thing. I don't want to go too much into material stuff. I tell you, you know, coming from living on the hard ground with DTs and seizures to where I've become, it has to do with my footwork, but I give all the glory to God, to be honest with you, and these rooms and these people, because you guys have the magic, and you guys can aim me in the right direction when I'm going crazy. How's it going, Brian? So I'm like I said, I moved on. Life started getting better. To be honest, I remember moments. I'll let you know about one real quick. I'd been at the cafeterias of GE for a couple of years now. I think about 3. Had my own cafeteria, and this business dining service came in. Sodexo, to be, if I remember correctly, and won a bid, and immediately upper management was gone immediately, and my buddy and boss and food service director said, Bill, you got a 30-day window, watch your step. I'm middle management. When I found out they wouldn't even let me reapply, I kind of knew, but I didn't really prepare myself. I was there already for, I handled them, or they handled me, for about 3 weeks, and then I was called to global headquarters, and I jumped on my old 03 Sportster, rode there for this little powwow table. Pretty much what they said is, Bill, you didn't do anything wrong, but we need you to turn in your badge. And, you know, what do you do? Unfortunate things do happen to people that are doing the next right thing. But I walked out of that big-ass building towards my bike, looking up at the sky, saying, God, why? You know, I was devastated. I had moved out to Wales. I invested. I bought my bike because of this program with cash. So fortunately, I didn't have any car payments or any bike payments. But to pick up or to head to the Dope House or to the tavern, I'm going to say probably about 15 seconds ran through my head. I needed relief. I was kind of pissed at God for what I thought failing me. But I had been coming to meetings. I had been doing step work. I had been doing the next right thing. And I aimed that bike to Earl Counseling, where my sponsor worked at that time. And I headed for him instead. And that was one of the moments, there's more, but that was one of the moments when I sat down in that chair inside that office and he let out a group and he, surprisingly to see me, especially during work hours, he looked at me and said, Bill, you okay? And I said, no. And he said, did you drink? And I said, no. And he said, then you're okay. And I said, well, I just lost my job. He said, you didn't drink, you're okay. And I said, did you hear what I said? I just lost my job. And he had 10 or 15 minutes to sit down when we talked about it. And he was saying interesting, crazy things like, this was meant to happen. You don't see it now, but the better things are down the road. Let's write this down as another spiritual experience. It was like, man, you are just, once again, though, crushed down some numbers, and I was okay. What can I do now? Boy, I can enjoy all of you guys. I can hit meetings, go on rides, and this is what sobriety does for me. And it wasn't more than two or three months later, got a job in senior living at Brookfield Regency. And at that time, I realized maybe I'm not going to go any further in my career if I don't get some sort of education, and I went back to school. And who would have thought, you know, that I would have gone back to school? So, being heavily involved in a Waukesha Alamo Club, as Bob might know and remember, of course, we had quite a group of us on the board of directors. For some reason or another, became president. Every once in a while, I'd get a call and say, so-and-so showed up this meeting with us and they smell like alcohol. And I'd say, my friend, read the mission statement. If there's a desire and the person isn't thrown up in your pocket, so to speak, and not being unruly, then they're welcome. Because maybe you can say something, even one or two sentences, that'll stick, and the next time you see them, you won't smell alcohol. And they might be off to what we call recovery. And I myself personally, during those moments, I really owe that Waukesha Alamo Club my life. I lived around the corner for my first 2 years, right across the street from Hannon's, and I was surrounded by neon and taverns and a nice little studio efficiency. But we have choices and we make decisions. And I could go out that back door, down that hall, and have a drink. I could pick up that phone and call my dope guy. But I decided to continue going out that front door, whether it's going to one of the churches down there for a meeting or just sitting in that club and talking to people that felt the same way I did. After a couple of years, once again, I was still in school, but I seen an opportunity. Things were getting sticky where I worked, not so much on my end, but I was getting uncomfortable. I was still in school. I had sponsees. I was involved in this, that, and another thing. When they talk about action is a key word, I talked to my sponsees about it today. Maybe at the moment, or probably the last couple of years, I've drifted away from that a bit. But for myself, just going to meetings was extremely important. But I had to start living the way you guys live, and living sober, and living and using those steps as a resource guide. So the more action, the more service work, the more I got involved, the better I could see the miracles starting to happen. And the most important person, whether it's right here, right now, or in any rooms I'm in, is that newcomer or that person that is struggling. And wrap your arms around that person and tell them that there's a solution and there's love out here. Because that's what I find, and that's what I get. And I had that opportunity to send my resume and a few interviews. My second interview at Kirkland Crossing, Pewaukee, I talked about my recovery date. And when you do a criminal background check, a thorough one like I know you're going to do, you're going to see a lot. You're going to see a hell of a lot. All misdemeanors, all municipal, all alcohol related. My third interview and my final interview, HR said, "You ain't kidding, Bill. There's page after page. But there isn't anything here that'll prevent us from hiring you." She also mentioned a key word here, that Bill, you are honest about it, and that meant a lot to us. So that's, I've been there now. Geez, next January I'll celebrate 10 years. When I couldn't even get through a day without trying to hook up with the crack men and the next drink and the insanity of where I was going to sleep, and it was a police officer going to be knocking on my tent door or that repo car window. So once again, one day at a time. My story and my addictions and my lifestyle to get as bad as I wasn't a sudden thing. It was a progressive thing. And I never did find, and I never will find, those highs that were early on. And my recovery was also progressive, and it still is as I'm standing here. And it always will be. I'm trying to remain teachable. I don't have all the answers. I'm far from perfect. That's why I need all you, and I need my sponsor, who reminded me that we haven't had lunch in 2 months. So maybe I should look at that and a few other things. I have some lower GI issues. Part of it's age, part of it was back in 2001 I was diagnosed with diverticulitis and hospitalized for 3 days. And mostly, I don't want to turn you off, but mostly because I ate popcorn, a couple handfuls of popcorn, all the hulls got jammed up. And but since 2001 until a few days back, I ate everything and anything except I'll never touch, you know, popcorn. I was doubled over. So I started feeling this pain again in my side. And I had a little blood there, and I made a note of it, trying to get an appointment, because I'm off for 5 days through my chart with my primary doctor. 15 minutes after that message went through, I got a call from one of the nurses that said, you need to come in here like immediately, now. And now it's 4 p.m. My boss is on vacation. I'm one person. I got a crew here. I got to work till 6:45, 7 o'clock. And she told me, and believe it or not, this was a triage nurse. I'm scared. Not only for myself, but because I've learned to become caring around of people around me and who you are and my staff, that if I get hospitalized, we are such a short crew, with my boss on vacation, we're gonna have problems. But they said, you come in immediately after work and your primary doctor will be here at 7:15. So that's what I did. Obviously, I'm standing here today. The love. I mentioned on Facebook, I checked in at Pearl Healthcare or whatever, and I was a little overwhelmed by all your responses. I believe there's, no exaggeration, 35 hits on or comments or likes, and so we did some labs and I'll be okay. We recovery today and the things that are possible with recovery. If you're struggling today, pick up that phone or look around you, grab onto somebody. Like I was talking about, don't leave until the miracles happen. Was I tempted again early in recovery? You better believe it. I had all kinds of reasons to drink, reasons to call my dope man. But there, as my sponsor said, nothing, absolutely nothing will justify you picking up, whether it's that pipe or that drink. And this disease will pick up pretty much where it left off, and I was close to the grave. So am I desperate to hang on and live another day and ride with you guys here this afternoon a little bit, and the picnic that you all put together. I'm so blessed with the friends that I can call friends. I mean, people come out where I live, whether it's three or four, and we throw a couple logs on and put on some music and talk program stuff or not. Or if it's 34, maybe I'm throwing a party again. And it's all about having a good time. It's all about, look around you. Look at these people. Look at what sobriety can do and has done. So once again, don't leave until the miracles happen. I think today I'm going to wrap up. I'd like to thank John for that wonderful introduction. I don't know how much of that he made up. I believe some of that's true, though, because I really do care. I've opened my doors at home for people sometimes not being too smart about it. That's why I got a sponsor. Sometimes I talk to him today and say, thanks, Bill, because I got away from, I got a week or two, or my friend that I can only visit in a monitor right now stayed with me for 2 months. And where is she? Unfortunately, just not able to get it. So I have to talk to her through a monitor at the county jail. But don't give up until a miracle happens. Thanks, Jim, for asking me to come up here. I think the first time he asked me, I agreed and then quickly said no, something like that. I pretty much knew he'd get me sooner or later, so. I don't know if anybody got any type of message off of my journey, my moments of insanity, my extreme examples of powerless and unmanageable. But all the glory goes to you and my higher power. So, knees in the breeze, after you get a bite to eat, stay cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Nice job. First of all, I got to thank John for the incredible introduction. That was awesome. And certainly thank Bill for an awesome, very humble message, which is one of the greatest things about him. So definitely want to thank him and for anybody that came up and read, everybody that came out to support the meeting. Could we please make a circle and close with the Lord's Prayer followed by the Serenity Prayer? If Bill would lead us, that would be wonderful.